Welcome to 1 in 7 on CHSR 97.9 on your FM dial. 1 in 7 is a twice-monthly show which will deal with issues relating to poverty. It is our hope to foster awareness and a better understanding of the problems associated with the fact that 1 in 7 Canadians live in poverty. Today's episode is the second of two parts. Our guest, Joanne, will continue to share with us her struggle with poverty, including a brief period of homelessness. Joanne has a BA and Master's in Sociology and began her PhD at McMaster University. After leaving university, she worked in the Department of Social Services for the City of Toronto, after which she moved to the East Coast and taught at St. Thomas University. Thank you so much for joining and sharing with us again today, Joanne.
Thank you for having me.
Middle management workers are finding themselves falling into poverty. Do you think it's safe to say that pretty well anyone can join the ranks of the poor in this country?
Well, yes, aside from the privileged, I guess, who don't have to fear this, but...
The 2%, you mean?
Pardon me?
The 2%?
Yes, the 2%. For the rest of us, yes. And I've read often over the years, that sentiment that people are often one paycheck away from losing everything they have. But I don't think that really hits for a lot of people until they actually do experience it, unfortunately. As you pointed out, the loss of buying power, I think, is a significant part of that, too. I think that more and more people are going to find themselves in this precarious place between making ends meet and poverty.
What do you think is the greatest misconception about those living in poverty from those who do not live in poverty?
I was thinking about this the other day. I was talking to a friend. I have heard or read the sentiment, get a job, enough times that it's starting to make my blood boil because it is such an unrealistic, simplistic understanding of the problem at hand. The misconception that people are on welfare because they don't want to work. I mean, there's so many flaws in that line of thinking. First of all, it discounts the fact that there are people who are, for physical or psychological reasons, unable to work. And it also discounts what I was talking about with you earlier about the fact that once you are in poverty, the barriers go up and it becomes very, very difficult to climb back out of it. This notion that people are lazy, that they want a free ride, you know, this is a ride I don't want to take because it's unpleasant. I guess that leads me to the second thing I think of is in terms of misconceptions is that we're getting enough to live on. Like, who would choose this kind of life where everything is a struggle and where luxuries completely, disappear? The idea that you don't deserve to have the luxuries in life because you're on welfare, because you have chosen not to work, it's enough to drive me crazy. And I am fortunate enough right now to be living in subsidized housing, because the rents in Fredericton, let's look at that. They're more than the amount that one is given to live on for a month. Medical welfare is about $750. That might get you an apartment. And sadly, the alternative to that are these back in the day they used to call them welfare rooming houses, and they're as awful as they sound. And even them, they would be taking probably 60% or 70% of the money that you're given to live on. So subsidized housing is important, and there's not enough of it. And it's being co-opted in some unsettling ways as well. But I can remember sitting out on the front lawn and having someone who actually lives here but has a job and qualifies for subsidized housing telling me this. Why don't these people just get a job? I mean, what do they think, that they could stay on this for years? And, you know, to have somebody that's living amongst you holding that kind of stereotypical attitude and bias is unsettling, to say the least. Another misconception. I really do think that most people think that shelters are free, and they're not. And I'll never get over the ludicrousy of that, that you're supposed to save enough to find a place, and most places want first and last. How are you going to do that if you have to turn over such a large portion of this piddly sum to begin with? And I guess that about sums it up. Just the idea that that this is a choice people make. I don't think that the majority of people that have found themselves in this position would ever have chosen it.
And what I find interesting is when people say, "Well, all they need is to get a job," it's obvious they don't realize that many poor people are working, hence the term working poor, because they're only able to get minimum wage jobs. And as we've heard recently in Ontario, where they raised the minimum wage, then all of a sudden they're losing health benefits and paid breaks. So the people who are getting this quote-unquote raise are paying for it.
And that is so discouraging. Isn't that capitalism at its finest? Raise the minimum wage, and that means layoffs, taking hours away so the benefits will be cut. And I think the most visible case of that right now is with Tim Hortons. Nobody can convince me that they cannot afford, with their profit margin, to pay people a living wage. And pardon me for saying this, but when you start looking at that picture, it comes down to greed.
What would we do in this country without corporate greed? What do you think people who are not living in poverty can do to address discrimination towards people living in poverty? Do you think they can do anything? People who have a nice job with good pay, own their own homes, what can they do to address discrimination towards people living in poverty?
Well, I think if you care about the country you live in, and you care about human rights and the well-being of others. If you're concerned about issues at all, then poverty should be one of them. And so people need to inform themselves about the realities of poverty, educate themselves. What is the situation? What are the welfare rates? How do we make sense of them in terms of what the average rent is in a city like this, or just about any other? And you know, those that are in poverty, I guess the same is that we have to speak up. It can't be something that can just continue to go on passively, and that bothers me. This acceptance that this is what people are deemed to be worthy of to receive because they're vulnerable, and if you look at the population of people that are in poverty. Well, we all know nobody's life is simple. There are often a lot of other factors at play that may explain what got them into poverty in the first place. I'm struggling here. We need to demand that our government representatives take a look at the situation, that they look at the rates, that they look at the fact that they haven't been raised in really in any significant way in decades. And again, that New Brunswick has the lowest rates in Canada. Why? What is their explanation for that? We have to start speaking out. We have to demand action. And government officials, it's their responsibility to look at what kind of conditions people are living in, because it's not a small number of people. And I know cities like Fredericton like to pretend that there isn't a large group of poor people, which is why they do things like they do to discourage people asking for money on the streets. You know, they install kindness meters. Put your money in these instead of putting them in the hands of the poor, because they don't want them to be visible. And that's appalling. I remember being in a university class not that long ago. I was taking a class in journalism, and the issue of poverty came up, and somebody mentioned homelessness. One of the students said, well, we don't have a homelessness problem in Fredericton. And I looked around, and they were nodding. And I was like, what? They looked at me like I had two heads when I told them that there were people that very evening setting their beds up under the bridge down by the river. We need to start making our presence known.
And the people who are living in poverty, that would apply to them as well, yes?
Absolutely. I know it's hard. It's hard to be proactive and vocal, especially if you feel beaten down, if you feel excluded, if you feel judged. Sometimes I think people lose the drive and the spirit and the confidence to speak up. But we must. I think really it's as much our responsibility as it is everyone else's.
Do you see poverty as a violation of human rights, Joanne?
I absolutely do. You know, something I've been hearing for years is, well, in third world countries, people, this is what life is like. Yes, I understand that. But this is not a third world country. Don't tell me to be grateful that I can have a box of Kraft dinner and that I get to have money in my pocket for the first 2 weeks of the month because somebody in another country is worse off. That doesn't make it right. It's not right anywhere, but don't tell me that as a means of making me feel lucky. Yes, I think it's a violation of human rights. And I think as Canadians, we should be ashamed that this is the value that we're giving to people's lives, the fiscal value.
Well said. A person I know who is working to fight poverty wrote that it's difficult to discuss poverty with people who cannot recognize that access to adequate food and housing is a human right. Is it possible, Joanne, that they don't comprehend what it means to live in poverty, do you think?
Yeah, I think that is a real possibility. I think that's an actual thing because I've encountered so many people throughout my life, even when I was teaching sociology and teaching inequality. It was really hard to get through to people who had never experienced it. And as I admitted, growing up in the suburbs, I didn't know it existed. Although I think I'll give myself a pass because I was a child. But if these things have never been an issue, that the power might get shut off, that we might not have access to a phone, perhaps one has to experience those things to truly understand them. I can't say for sure. Is it the same as you know, people don't understand depression unless they've experienced it? And yet, on the other hand, I can read accounts of racism, and I can be appalled and outraged without having experienced it myself. So I don't know what the answer to that is. Is it an absence of compassion, or does one really have to be there to get it?
I would like to think not.
Me too.
Human rights ensures that government policies will not hurt the people it's their job to protect. There's a social contract between the people and their governments. Do you feel our provincial and federal governments are actively concerned about people who live in poverty or just mouthing platitudes?
If they're even acknowledging it, it's not a part of the dialogue, as far as I'm concerned, nearly enough. Do I think that the provincial and federal governments are actively concerned? No, I do not, because they've given me no reason to think they are. Let me read you what the mandate is at the top of a letter from the Department of Social Development, which is what they like to call it, social development. Their mandate is self-reliance, an improved quality of life, and protection for those who need it. This is on the letterhead. When I do hear from them, it's to tell me that any medical benefits, time's up, jump through some hoops, get a letter from your doctor, take it to your pharmacy, get an estimate. You will not receive any more of these benefits until we receive this information. Or the long letters gleefully announcing the raise of $2.80. And I don't think I've seen one of those for 3 years. And when I read that, self-reliance and improved quality of life and protection for those who need it, that's a wonderful mandate. Is that being expressed in the policies, in the welfare rates? Not in the slightest.
So what do governments, both provincial and federal, need to do right now?
Well, I guess in the short term, people need to see an increase in the welfare rates. Absolutely, and it needed to be done yesterday. And a significant one. When you look at what even on a grocery bill, what's being paid in taxes for things that are, you know, that are deemed luxury items, the GST checks that we're getting don't even begin to cover that. Operating in a constant hole. And I'm not kidding when I say that people receiving social assistance are lucky if they have money in their pockets for the first 2 weeks of the month. So there's that. And when it comes to the working poor, of course, there's minimum wage increase. Now, what do we do about the fact that these corporations and companies and businesses respond by saying, oh, really? You're raising the minimum wage? We'll lay off workers. I don't know. I don't know what we're going to do. What I think in the big picture and the long term, what we really have to continue having a dialogue about is a guaranteed income and setting that up and how would that work. And that would be an across-the-board kind of consideration for everybody. Working too sick to work, displaced because of automation, whatever's going on, we have to find a way, in my humble opinion, of finding a way to make a guaranteed income something that works economically. But if we bow to greed on the part of corporations and apathy on the part of government, that dialogue is not going to happen.
It's you're using the terms corporations and government in the same sentence. Do you think, as some do, and I'm not saying I do, but okay, I do. I think the government is run by corporations, basically. Not run by, but they have an extraordinary influence over government.
Absolutely. That reality is, I would say, more evident when we look at American politics. It's more blatant, perhaps.
Yeah, it's more open, I think.
Yes, but of course, the government has a place in the pockets of corporations, pharmaceutical companies, which is a whole other topic. But I think we'd be naive not to think so. Equality, in many ways, it conflicts with the principles of capitalism. If the bottom line is greed, we've got a real problem. And I keep hoping that as we in quotes, evolve as human beings, that we'll start to realize that we need to make changes in the way the economy is organized, in the distribution of wealth, in access to resources. I hope I'm not being overly optimistic, but I still like to think that we can come up with a solution.
Do you have any final comments, Joanne? Anything you want to sum up?
I truly believe that, you know, I am very, very, I feel very fortunate to have been born in Canada, especially right now. I think if we're all to be sufficiently proud, we have to recognize that poverty diminishes us all. And my final words would be reveal, resist, rebel.
Thank you very much, Joanne, for joining us today and last week.
Thank you for listening to me, Kay.
We have been speaking with Joanne, who has given us her first voice account of living in poverty in New Brunswick. One in Seven's technician is Colm Lee McPhee, and I am your host, Kay Brookland. Until next time, this is One in Seven on CHSR FM. If you would like to access the podcast of our show, please visit chsrfm.ca/1-in-7.